You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
It's hour two on this Friday, Dan and the Danettes. Dan Patrick Show. It's a Meat Friday. We've been taking turns, all the Danettes, yours truly, picking out the menu on a Meat Friday, and it's Todd Fritz's day today. Todd, the menu coming off the Traeger later on today is?
New York strip steak, garlic mashed potatoes, bacon-flavored Brussels sprouts are infused, if we can use a fancy word, in a reduction or something, and mini pigs in blankets, little mini hot dogs on top of all that.
Can you do a max hot dogs in blanket? There are always mini hot dogs.
They have the footlongs, or they have just different size hot dogs.
But they're never referred to as pigs in a blanket.
They're not. I'm not sure where that came up, but I love the idea of the little mini hot dogs. Get a nice bowl of mini hot dogs and kick back and watch some Final Four. Life is good.
All right. That'll be coming up a little bit later on. Phone number, 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address, dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle, @DPShow. McLovin has been on this soapbox, this rant, this kick to downplay the 40-yard dash times at pro days. Like, this is obsessed, McLovin here.
Totally.
Yes.
Not to the point where I'd actually do some real work and time some 40s on TV, but obsessed in a general way.
Okay, explain to the audience why you are possessed by this and out to disprove what these numbers are at these pro days.
So every year, 40 times come out at the combine, and those are the official computerized, laser judge 40 times.
Yeah.
And players get that stigma for life. We all know Larry Fitzgerald had this measurement in a 40. But this year, there's no combine, so everyone's taking their pro day 40s, which are notoriously a tenth of a second faster, and saying that these guys run these 40s. So Kyle Pitts running a 4.44 is hard to trust because it's been hand-timed and not computer-timed.
Now, we tried to hand-time these 40-yard dashes, like Kyle Pitts, the star tight end from Florida, and we tried to hand-time those during the commercial breaks. And we were all over the map as far as from 4.4 to, 4.8. Yes, Eden.
But don't these, bad pro day times, or I don't know if they're, are they inflated or whatever, pro day times set up players for failure at the combine when they inevitably run slower than what we expected them to run? Like, wait, I thought you were going to run a 4.3 and you ran a 4.4. What happened?
Well, if you don't run at the combine, then you can just live off your pro day.
Yeah.
Touche.
The combine's first. The pro days are always after, too. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
But if you don't run at the combine, then you just run your pro day. And chances are, I'm looking at some combine compared to pro days from a year ago. And or 2 years ago. There's a huge difference here in what players were running at the combine when it's electronically timed as opposed to a handheld. Like, how difficult is it for a handheld where you're down at the end of the 40-yard dash and the player starts up here, and then you go, and then stop. And we screwed it up. Nobody had the exact time. All four Danettes were timing Kyle Pitts. And you had your phone, your clock there. Yes,
according by my calculations, he ran a 4.97.
I know.
So overrated.
Yes, McLovin.
My favorite thing was that Seton did it again and got 4.5. He goes, wow, he just got a half second faster.
Half second faster.
The same video.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Paul.
At my pro day, I would run downhill and just tilt the camera a little bit to make it look like I'm running on flat ground. I run a 3.8.
Yeah. We talked a lot of football yesterday, and what I said yesterday with my sources got a lot of traction. And, one of the ones to keep an eye on is still Sam Darnold, because I said that the Jets were hoping to get a second-round pick. They would settle for a third. It might not even be a third from what I was told yesterday, because you're taking Sam Darnold and you're going into no man's land with him. If he's really good, now this is financially, if he's really good, then you franchise him. And what would the franchise tag for Sam Darnold be at that position?
Wasn't Dak in the 30s or 20s to start? He was like 25. So it'd be about 25 for a year.
Yeah, but you're
more.
Yeah, I'm thinking it'd be more than that.
Yeah, with a couple of years, it would be next year. Yeah, it'd be pretty high, 28 maybe. It's a guess.
It was 24 this past year. I'm going to guess it'll go up, a couple million dollars next year. Or you can give him a long-term contract that's going to be one of those $100 million deals, because it feels like that's what every quarterback signs when they get that extension. He's 23. There's a lot of promise there. I don't know if the Jets are going to get a second-round. They would jump at a second-round pick, I'm going to guess, right now. But after we got off the show, I had a source say, look, you're saying second, they're hoping they'd settle for a three. Don't be surprised if it's a four. And I go, wow. Because there's no leverage here. People know they're taking Zach Wilson. Steve Young, the Hall of Fame quarterback, came out yesterday. He was on KNBR in San Francisco, and he said that he knows that Zach Wilson prefers San Francisco over the New York Jets. That's his number one choice. It doesn't work that way, Steve. He may not want to go to the Jets, but even though the Niners may prefer. I told you, the Niners tried to go up and get the second pick, and the Jets weren't budging off of that. They're taking Zach Wilson. Now, that's when they did inquire about Sam Darnold, because if they weren't going to be able to move up, it felt like they were probably going to trade for Sam Darnold. Probably. Yeah, Paul.
Why wouldn't a guy like Zach Wilson then pull a Eli Manning? I mean, it's been done before. There's precedent for this. This is your one chance in a lifetime to, you know, take the hit, but go where you want to go.
Yeah. I mean, it could do that, but the Jets are taking Zach Wilson. And then as far as what happens with the Niners at three, I told you that there were three sources that told me, and then a fourth after the show said that everybody in the two used the same expression, that Mac Jones to the Niners, done deal. Two of the four sources. But all four said, you know, we're hearing that it's Mac Jones to the 49ers. And I had one source say it is Mac Jones, but, and it's Kyle Shanahan and his father, Mike Shanahan. They're the ones making the choice, not John Lynch, the GM. But there is somebody or someones in the, you know, draft room who are pushing for Trey Lance in San Francisco. That's all the information that I had, and I shared that with you yesterday. You know, I don't know if anybody's refuting that, but, you know, these are four sources that I spoke to about this, and the one with the Jets, and Carolina is the team that they would keep an eye on. Carolina's been dying to move up. They want a quarterback. Their owner has basically said that in-house, we are getting our quarterback. And moving on from Teddy Bridgewater. I don't know where they're going, because the Jets aren't going to do that. They're not getting Deshaun Watson. As far as what happens at four with the Falcons, the Bengals aren't taking a quarterback, and you go there. And who do you want? Who's going to be there? And is that going to be the quarterback you want? That's why I was told, if Carolina can't move up and get one of these quarterbacks, don't be surprised to see Sam Darnold end up in Carolina. Yeah, McClubbin.
The way you frame it, it's almost like Sam Darnold's in the draft a little bit. I know the contract doesn't work out, but he's only 23, so it's almost like you're evaluating him against these guys. And I think he might stack up pretty well, right?
But he doesn't have the rookie contract.
Right.
That's what you want. If you're San Francisco, I get rid of Jimmy G, and I go to a rookie contract at quarterback. Now I hit the reset button, and I can restock, you know, replenish the refrigerator there. Yeah, Paul.
It does appear that there's like a range of quarterback you don't want to be. You don't want to be 24 and not that great. Because, you know, look, Mitch Trubisky was worth nothing. What was it? Jameis Winston was worth almost nothing on the market last year.
Yeah. And there's two teams that I have told you about in with the possibility of landing Sam Darnold. And I haven't wavered off of this because I've heard it from reliable people. I mentioned the Niners. The Niners were interested in Sam Darnold, obviously not going to now because they moved up. The Pittsburgh Steelers were the other team. The Steelers and the Niners were the two teams. I'd been told from the outset that if they use that pick second overall on a quarterback, then Sam Darnold will be jettisoned. Carolina came up, you know, from a source the day before where, hey, this is a team that he could land there. And with Matt Rhule, Christian McCaffrey, got some weapons there. And, you know, you got a quarterback-friendly head coach. You know, that might be the route that they take. But I had not heard that until, you know, this week. Pittsburgh and San Francisco, I had been hearing probably the last 6 weeks. Yeah, McClub.
Any idea on the timeline? Is this like before draft likely?
Well, you don't have any leverage for Sam Darnold. So if you can trade him now and somebody's willing to give you a second round pick, maybe it's a third round pick, do you wait till after the draft? Do you have even less leverage after the draft? Will you have more if Carolina doesn't get their guy? Does Pittsburgh want him? I don't know. I mean, they got Dwayne Haskins, Roethlisberger probably in his final year, Mason Rudolph. But do you bring in Sam Darnold? I don't know. But I did talk about this a couple of weeks ago. It felt like there was a domino effect that was going to happen with Sam Darnold, that once he was traded, then that opens the door. The Jets aren't entertaining any offers for that second pick overall. Well, I guess that's done because they want Zach Wilson as their quarterback. 877-3DP show, email address dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle @DP Show. Coming up, Jeff Perlman. Jeff Perlman wrote a great book, a great author. Now, the book is Showtime, and HBO has decided to make that into a TV series. And there's some big-time actors involved in this. Will Ferrell's writing partner, Adam McKay, is involved in this. Well, we'll talk to Jeff Perlman about what he thinks this series will be about. A lot of times when it's sports and it's a TV show or a movie, it's just about relationships. It's not necessarily about the action as athletes on the field or on the court, on the baseball field. It's about relationships. And is that Pat Riley's relationship with, the stars on the team, Magic Johnson? But you've got some big-time actors who are involved in this. Yeah, Paulie?
Adrian Brody's in it, Michael Chiklis, Sally Fields in it. There's a lot of people in it. John C. Riley, Jason Segel.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll talk to Jeff Perlman about that.
Would they have someone play Jack Nicholson? Do you think they'd have an actor to play Jack Nicholson? Mm-hmm. Would that be a cool little tweak? I'll check the IMDb.
How about Christian Slater? Christian Slater sounds like Jack Nicholson.
Perfect.
There you go. Yes, McLovin.
I just saw Norm Nixon will be played by his son. And I guess Norm Nixon's an interesting character on this team. I don't remember him at all, but his Devon Dick Nixon will play Norm Nixon, the playboy who overcame insurmountable odds to become an all-star point guard.
Hmm.
But is he part of the Showtime? I thought he was kind of gone by the time they went Showtime.
I don't know how much bleed over there was there, but Norm was a good player. And I think Norm got hurt. Didn't he suffer a knee injury? Was he with the Clippers as well? Yes, Todd.
Who's going to play Jamal Wilkes then if Norm Nixon's in the movie? I thought those two guys had nothing to do with Showtime.
I got to find somebody who can shoot like Jamal Wilkes. Yes.
Well. We were surprised that Jason Segel's not playing Kurt Rambis. I mean, what a destined role that would be. Jason Segel's a ball player.
Who's playing Kurt Rambis?
I don't have anybody playing Kurt Rambis.
Yeah.
That's sad.
All right, so Dick Vitale will join us coming up next hour. Katie in Wisconsin. Hey, Katie, what's on your mind?
Hey, I'm calling. Oh, second time caller. I'm calling to nominate myself to be the president of Todd's fan club because I agree with Todd on so many things. First of all, his meal choice today is amazing. I think he is a wonderful writer. His lyrics, his poems, I just really admire them. And I totally agree with him about this baseball stuff, the strategy. They're messing with it. You know, you should be able to do a shift. And putting his guys on second base is kind of silly. And they've already messed with how many batters a pitcher can pitch to. They changed that rule. So I agree with him on that stuff. And I also think another way that you could get young people to like baseball is to teach them how to score. I grew up in the ballpark, and my dad taught me how to score a game, and I taught my kids how to score a game, and I think it kept them much more involved.
All right.
So thank you very much, and you guys have a great Easter.
Katie, will you stay on hold there for a moment? I mean, we found somebody, Todd. It's been 19 years, and I found somebody in the Todd Fritz fan club.
Obviously, the check cleared, and she got the money, so that's good ahead of the complimentary words, which I appreciate. That was very sweet.
Yeah. Maybe Marvin, get Katie's address, and we'll send her some Todd Fritz t-shirt.
I could write her a limerick at the very least.
Yeah, you should be able to come up with a limerick for Katie.
That's the least I could do.
Yeah. Really appreciate the call. Sometime this fall. And that is why we love you so.
I dropped the ball.
Have a ball.
Yeah. Yes, McLovin.
Do you agree with her? Keeping score, is that cool? Is bringing a glove as an adult cool? And are you allowed to sneak down still? What age is that cool?
You can bring a glove. I don't care how old you are. You want to bring a glove? Bring a glove. I don't care.
It's when you bring a bat that the security guard appreciates.
That's true.
The old Shea Stadium.
Yeah. One of my first dates with my wife, we went to minor league baseball and taught her how to the New Britain Red Sox. And I wore a protective cup. I had some eye black. I mean, I really got into the game.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, and I taught her how to keep score.
You were the guy in the stirrups in row
yes,
eight,
Yes,
right?
I was. Just stirrups.
I only spoke to her. Hey there, baby. Little bingo, on, baby. Hey, on that, hey, man. Hey, bingo. Hey, that kid. She was like, okay.
Yeah. I had some tobacco. You know, I'd be right. Spitting. Yeah, yeah. Just, I gave her signs. Like, I didn't talk to her. I just gave her signs. I did. I taught my wife how to keep score in a minor league baseball game. I think it helped the relationship. We also went to a game where Daryl Strawberry, I think, broke his thumb. And we went to a game at Shea Stadium. We sat all the way up in the upper part of Shea Stadium. We brought in beers. We snuck in beers. And beautiful game. And I think in May, check and see when Daryl Strawberry broke his thumb. Because it was it around like May 13th or May 12th or something like that? But I just remember we went to the game and had beers, sunny day. Yeah, Paulie.
That's a great litmus test whether a woman is marriage material. She'll help you sneak alcohol into a sporting event. My wife put two flasks in her back pocket. We went to a college football game. I was like, this one's a keeper.
But she really didn't know anything about sports. We went to the Virginia Slims tennis. And that would be this year-end tennis at the Madison Square Garden. And I took her there, and we were sitting in the front row. And Martina is playing Hanna Monlikova. And my wife is talking as if she's talking outside at a picnic. And just talking and da-da-da-da-da. And Martina is getting ready to serve. And Martina looks over and like gives me this look because I had interviewed Martina when I worked at CNN. And like she's like, what? And I said, you know, to my wife, who is my girlfriend, I said, shh, shh, got to be quiet, got to be quiet. Why do I have to be quiet? And I looked over, and there's Martina looking over like, you guys going to be quiet here? Yeah, see.
Well, I think it was this weekend in the match play. There was, I don't remember who the golfer was, but he's getting ready to tee off at whatever hole.
Yeah.
And you're just watching, and you can hear somebody's phone ringing in the back. Ding, 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 ding. Ding, 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 ding. And he's waiting. And after about 30 seconds, just turns and goes, you can turn that off whenever you want. So no hurry.
Ooh. We went to a wake for a friend. And I mean, you're bringing in four little kids, and you know, you're just trying to get them dressed up to go to a wake. And the son of his mother died. And so we went to pay our respects. And so he's up there, you know, giving this beautiful speech. And he said, you know, the one thing that my mother hated, like she really hated everybody who's attached to their phones and modern technology. And my wife's phone rings right then. And you just hear this. Ring, ring, so it's myself and my four kids, and we're staring at my wife going, are you going to answer that? She waited until it just stopped ringing, but it must have had like 12 rings.
Was she looking forward solemnly, like focused?
Yes.
So
yes.
I can ignore it?
Yeah, we totally were busting. We're like, it's right here, right here. And she wanted to be solemn, pay her respects, but that's all this poor woman cared about was people who weren't attached to their phones. Yes, Todd.
May 11th, 1985. Does that ring a bell for a Mets-Phillies game? Daryl Strawberry tears ligaments in his right thumb.
There you go.
Lost for the team for 5 weeks.
There you go.
Fell on his right hand while making a spectacular dive and catch in the third inning.
Yeah, there you go. And that's I was at Shea Stadium with my then girlfriend having beers in the upper deck of Shea. Yes, McGlynn.
I was going through the Mets season. That was a wild team. There's like three players who've gone to rehab already. I went game by game. Somebody killed a pigeon with a fly ball. Do you remember that?
They were a crazy team.
There's so much
they
drama.
They should have won more. Like if you look at the New York Giants back then, and the New York Mets back then, those are two teams that should have won more. That Mets team had as much talent, but it was wild. Every time you show up, there'd be something else going on. Now, Davey Johnson was a very steady manager there. He wasn't like Billy Martin. When I go to Yankee Stadium, like Billy Martin, I had no idea what to expect out there. But, you know, with Strawberry, with Gooden, Lenny Dykstra, there was Hojo, Howard Johnson. Like, they had a bunch of, who was Wally Backman, Tim Tuffle. Not that those guys were crazy, but there are enough wackos on that team. Yes, Todd.
Harry Carey used to call him Hojo Johnson. I always got a kick out of that, even though it was Howard Johnson. Hojo Johnson!
Yeah, Paul.
If I could have put money on someone going to the Hall of Fame at a young age, Dwight Gooden at age 20 was 24-4 with a 1.53 ERA in the National League. He won the Cy Young, fourth in the MVP. That guy was going to the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
I mean, he really didn't have that many injuries. There was more off the field.
Well, and Strawberry, too.
Yep.
Because he was supposed to be the next Ted Williams, although he couldn't hit like Ted, but he had power. He had unbelievable power. And he really was a nice guy. I mean, Dwight was a nice kid. It just, he had some demons. And probably still does. But I remember seeing Dwight pitch in person, and that was just something different. There are probably a handful of pitchers that I've watched in person, and you go, boy, it's different. And he was certainly up there. All right, when we come back, Jeff Perlman will join us. We'll talk about the series Showtime that's going to be on HBO and the casting on that, and how surprised he was that they decided they wanted to do this on HBO. 22 after the hour, this is the Dan Patrick Show. I told Todd, don't have a Built Bar today. You don't need one unless you need to have a Built Bar to get ready for what's coming off the Traeger.
I do like to have that kind of, you know, Built Bar thing going right before the meal.
Okay.
He's not going to have a Built Bar.
I know. That's the problem. It's not a singular Built Bar.
Because I can't decide which flavor. So I'm like, oh, that's an easy solution. Just have like three different ones.
But if you have one now. That'll tide you over for the next hour and a half.
That's a good idea.
Okay. But this is what happens because Built Bar is so good. High protein, low carb, low sugar, gluten-free. It's a protein bar. 100% real chocolate in there. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code DP10. At checkout, you'll get 10% off your order. Cookies and cream. I mean, run down the list. The salted caramel. There's so many great flavors there. And they're always coming out with amazing new flavors all the time. Do your body and your taste buds a favor. Order a box today. But make sure when you order that box, hide it. Check them out, BuiltBar.com, BuiltBar.com. Promo code is DP10, and tell them we sent you. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you can get your podcast.
Where other vans stop short, Mercedes-Benz vans go far beyond. From their customization options, cutting-edge tech, to their five-star sales service and financial support crew, Mercedes-Benz vans are built, equipped, and engineered to be ready for anything. Go the extra mile, taking the all-important first step into an authorized dealership today. We were talking about Norm Nixon. He was traded to the Clippers. The Lakers just drafted Byron Scott. That's the summer of 1983. Not a popular move at the time. I think Magic looked at Norm Nixon as somewhat of a mentor. Jeff Perlman has written the book, New York Times bestselling author of 9 books, host of the Two Writers Slinging Yang podcast, Showtime, Magic, Kareem, Riley, and the Lakers dynasty of the 1980s, and now HBO making it into a series. Jeff, good morning. How surprised were you that you hear from how did you hear from somebody who decided that this would make for a great series?
So there's a guy named Jim Hecht, and he's a writer. And I only knew him because I looked at his IMDb page, and he was the writer of Ice Age, The Meltdown. That was his main credit. And he wanted to come to my house and sort of talk to me about the idea of turning this Laker book into a, he's like, I just think it could be something. And he shows up at our house. This is when we lived in New York, in New Rochelle, New York. And he shows up with a block of chocolate a tomato and a bottle of fake wine. Like that was his wooing material that he brought. It was, I think he was at Grand Central and just needed to bring something. And he shows up at our house and he's like, I just really think this could be something good. And I don't know. And we're like, all right, yeah, yeah, yeah. Cause if you do this long enough, you do get stuff optioned and it almost never becomes anything. I've had stuff optioned many times by now and it never becomes anything. And here's this guy, Ice Age, the Meltdown, Jim Hecht. And you think this is going to be nothing. And that was probably 7 years ago. And now I don't know how this happened. I swear to God, I have no idea how this happened. It's the craziest thing that's ever happened in my career.
What's the status of the production?
They're starting to film. And they did the pilot already. And they're starting to film multiple episodes in a couple of days, actually. And it's fully cast and it's unbelievable.
A lot of times we look at a sports movie, we think it's a sports movie, but it's about relationships. And I don't know if it's different in a series because, you know, how much of this is about actual basketball or the relationships within the basketball team or, you know, Jerry Buss or Pat Riley. So can you give us a sense of what you think the direction is of Showtime?
Well, I think they're very hyper into the sort of development of the dynasty, at least at this point, and sort of not just Jerry Buss, but how he became Jerry Buss. And, you know, the blooming of Magic Johnson. One thing they've done that I think is really cool is if you look at the cast, they've combined a lot of really established actors playing these big roles, you know, Adrian Brody, Sally Field is different. And then like the guy playing Magic, who's awesome, is a guy named Quincy Isaiah. He's just a young sort of unknown actor. And it just seems like they're really emphasized the blooming of relationships and the development of these characters, not just, it's not just going to be a stupid, you know, look at them play basketball. We're just going to throw a bunch of balls out there and have actors play basketball really poorly. I think it's going to be more about the development of the characters, which is what you try to do in a book.
How do you cast Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
You get someone very tall. The guy playing him was played basketball at Cal. So they casted very tall. I mean, I don't, you know, it's interesting because I've learned a lot about sort of what goes into it and how it's not just about height. Like you don't just want a 7'2" guy if all the other actors are 5'11". So everything is in ratio and everything is relative. I actually learned a lot just from observing and sort of being kept in the loop about everything and how it goes down.
What's the one thing that you took away from your book that you didn't know? Like it became a lot larger or it stayed quieter than you thought it was going to?
I actually, at the time, I was unaware of the sort of demons of Jerry West. I always thought growing up and then watching basketball that Jerry West was just calm, cool, collected. And then you really get to know him and learn about him. And he's a really tortured individual. It's kind of what makes him great. But the everything he's gone through in his boyhood, sort of abuse, he reminds me a lot of Billy Beane. You've probably experienced a lot of Billy Beane, where he can't watch a game.
Yeah.
I remember covering the A's and Billy Beane could not watch a game. And Jerry West is basically Billy Beane. I always found that torture really interesting.
Yeah, he's brought that up a couple of times that, you know, he had a shotgun under his mattress and he was going to kill his dad who was abusing his mom. And he said he used to drive around, like he couldn't even be in the building sometimes with the Lakers with these big games, that he would drive around and then wait till the game was over.
One thing that's interesting, you mentioned in the intro of Norm Nixon and Magic Johnson, the trading of Norm Nixon. And Magic Johnson was thrilled when Norm Nixon was traded. He was not upset. There was a real conflict between those two. Norm Nixon had been the established point guard and really viewed as his team. And then Magic comes along and they kind of hand it to him and it's his team. And there was no way it was going to work having those two point guards. It's not like they hated each other, but it was not a very good on-court basketball relationship.
How tough was Riley on these players? Oh,
I mean, it's interesting. He came in, and when he arrived, he was a completely inexperienced, you know, been a radio guy, you know, had been with Chick Hearn, and then he's an assistant under Westhead, and suddenly he's a head coach. And everyone's like, oh, it's Pat Riley, laid-back Pat Riley. And over the years, he developed this term called peripheral distractions. That was his thing. We can't have any peripheral distractions. And peripheral distractions meant the media, it meant wives, it meant girlfriends, it meant anything that took away from the team at all. And he became sort of hyper intense about it. And by the time he was done, by the time his run ended, the Laker players wanted nothing to do with him because he just had gone way over the top.
But if you, I remember when Wright Thompson did a profile on Pat Riley, and then you got an idea, because when Wright does a deep dive, you're going to find out about that person, and you realize that's Pat Riley. You know, perfectionist, never happy, you know, what he grew up with his father. And, you know, I would hear stories, but I was never close enough that they just, they kind of tolerated him, you know, at the end. They sort of just tolerated Riles, and but he had definitely worn out his welcome. What's part of the book that you might be not nervous about, but, you know, maybe how do you capture this in the true sense of what it really was in the book?
So there's my favorite moment of all the stuff I wrote about for that book is Magic Johnson's arrival in Los Angeles. And there's this moment that I just love. He comes to LA for the first time to negotiate with the Lakers, and he's being driven in a limo down some street, and he sees oranges growing on a tree, and he tells a guy to stop the car. And he gets out and he picks an orange because he's just blown away by this idea that I'm in this land where fruit is growing on a tree. And I just think the essence of that team and that era and everything about in that book can be summed up in Magic Johnson picking an orange from a tree. And just, I don't know how, I'm not saying you can't do it, how you capture the sort of late 70s, early 80s guy who's never been to California, his life about to change forever, all embodied by the beauty of an orange on a tree and just being dazzled by that fruit sitting there. I love that. I don't know if it, I don't know how you capture that, but I just think it's the most beautiful thing.
Was there one move that almost didn't happen or the other way? Like they made a move and it benefited them.
Well, the trade that almost happened that almost ended the Jerry Buss, Jerry West marriage was they almost traded James Worthy to Dallas for Mark Aguirre. And Jerry Buss agreed to the deal with Don Carter, the Mavs owner, behind Jerry West's back and goes and says to Jerry West, oh, we have this deal worked out. And on paper, that's a complete, that's a very, very fantasy basketball kind of trade. We're like, this is amazing. Mark Aguirre averages 25 a game. And then you're stuck with Mark Aguirre. And Jerry West said, if you make this trade, I'm done here. So that trade, I think, almost ruined everything.
Did they almost not get Magic or pass on Magic?
Well, they, the first choice of Jerry West, he's loath to talk about this, is was Sidney Moncrief out of Arkansas. It's actually an interesting thing, though. I always say this.
I mean, Hall of Famer.
If their backcourt is Sidney Moncrief, Norm Nixon with Kareem at center, Jamal Wilkes at one, that's not a bad team.
Yeah.
It's not the Showtime Lakers, but they're still probably, they're certainly in the topic of a championship. But, you know, Moncrief did not have the charisma and the spark one that razzle-dazzled with Magic Johnson. But it was definitely considered strongly.
But also the style that they played, Jeff, that it was Showtime. Was Riley a fan of Showtime?
Yeah, well, you know, the thing that's interesting is it started, their first coach was a guy named Jack McKinney. He was a coach. People forget about this. The first coach, actually, Jerry Tarkanian was supposed to be the coach. And Jerry Buss hired Jerry Tarkanian. They agreed to it. And then Jerry Tarkanian's agent turned up dead in the trunk of a car. And that Tarkanian decided not to take the job. True story. Then they hired Jack
McKinney. Is there a backstory on that, Jeff? That sounds like a movie.
Yeah, well, there were a lot of mafioso ties. And I forgot exactly what the agent had done, but he crossed some line you weren't supposed to cross, and they ended up being killed. And this was a close friend of Tarkanian, and Tarkanian decided he couldn't take the job. There's too much going on, blah, 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 blah. But then they hired Jack McKinney, who had been a longtime St. Joe's assistant, head coach, Jack Ramsey's assistant in Portland. He's the head coach, and everything's going great. And he puts in this system that became known as Showtime. And I think it was 14 games or 11 games into his first season. It's a day off. He has one assistant coach in the quaint days of the NBA, Paul Westhead. They're going to play tennis. Jack McKinney is riding his bike to meet Paul Westhead, falls head over heels, lands on his head. It's amazing how this was so quaint of the days of the NBA. He was a John Doe in the hospital. The head coach of the Lakers was a John Doe in the hospital, suffers severe brain trauma. Paul Westhead takes over, runs Jack McKinney's system, leads the Lakers to the championship. McKinney is never brought back. Westhead wears out his welcome quick. And Riley comes in. So Riley just kind of resumed the system called. I mean, they start calling it Showtime, but it really was Jack McKinney's system.
Is it 1 year? I mean, it's one season, I should say, as far as HBO. Is that the commitment right now?
Yeah, I think so. But I think the plan is to do more than one.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know contractually what it is right now, but I think the plan is to do more than one.
You get a cameo?
I did get a cameo.
Do you play yourself in the series?
Well, I would have only been like 6 years old at the time, but I do play. I played a reporter. My wife, Catherine, was Rod Thorne's executive assistant during the draft. And my kids played extras during a scene in a Hollywood set. So it's been really cool. It's been great.
I was also wondering, we brought this up, like if you were looking at like Kobe and Shaq, that feels like that would be an interesting series. I don't know right?
I mean, I wrote a book on the era. If they I welcome them to option
three,
that book.
Three Ring no Circus. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Sure. Why not? I was wondering, is there another, let's say you could pick any other basketball. McLovin, do you have a couple?
Oh, I was saying, the LeBron Heat team, or maybe the Kevin Durant and the Warriors recently, like a Moneyball version of the Warriors.
I don't know if there's any real drama there.
LeBron going back to the Cavs?
I mean, I heard you guys talking about it. I wrote a book. My first book was about the 86 Mets. And that book has been optioned about 73,000 times. And the Mets have always just been a pain in the butt about it. I'm hoping new ownership maybe. But I think the 86 Mets are a great story.
I don't know if we ever crossed paths, but I was working at CNN and covering the Mets back then. And I there's stories I can't tell, but I mean, it was crazy. One time I was in Chicago, I can tell this and this isn't bad, but I see Lenny Dykstra at the China Club, and Lenny has a dip. He's got a cigarette and he's got a drink, and he had like all the vices. Well, all the vices I knew of back then, but he had it all going on. And I just remember whenever you were around these people, they were all there were big person, even Gary Carter, you know, kid was straight as can be, but he was a big personality. Then you had Gooden, who was private, you know, Strawberry, you never quite sure. Keith Hernandez, I was never quite sure. Roger McDowell, you know, Danny Heap, Jesse, like there are all these personalities here. How did you kind of keep track of, you know, who to go to and who not to go to?
I just want to say, I just said to someone the other day, and I bet you'd agree with this. If you had said to someone in 1986, which of these players is going to pass first? Gary Carter would have been the last guy on that list.
Yeah.
It just would have been the last guy. He was a straight living, clean, blah, 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 blah. My favorite Dykstra is they were at a golf club one time and there were a bunch of priests in the golf club. I don't know why, playing golf or whatever. And in the clubhouse. And Lenny Dykstra goes to a friend, watch this. And he walks up to the priest, lifts a leg and just drops a huge fart in front of the priest. Like he was the most vile, but entertaining. He'd be a great character in a movie.
Oh.
I think that team was just stuffed with characters, as you noted.
But you had 86 Mets, 86 New York Giants, and they only won one. And I kept thinking both of those underachieved with the talent that they had. But if you had LT with Parcells and the Giants, that might have been an interesting one as well. So you got,
I agree.
Yeah. Well, good luck with this, Jeff. Congrats. It's a great book. It's Showtime Magic, Kareem Riley, and the LA Laker dynasty of the 1980s. And now it's been greenlit by HBO. Thank you, Jeff.
All right. Thanks, Tim.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back after this. Dick Vitale in about 40 minutes from now on the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. The things that are said during commercial breaks around here. WrestleMania. Don't miss WWE's biggest event of the year. Watch your favorite superstars compete in their most important matches on the grandest stage of them all. Sign up. PeacockTV.com. Stream all the action live starting April 10th, only at Peacock. Paulie had a video earlier today about an MMA wrestler who lost part of his finger or an entire finger during a match.
Yeah, it was the Cage Fury Fighting Championships Thursday night in Philly. There's an MMA fighter named, I don't know pronunciation, Ketag Pliev, and he was fighting a guy named Devin Goodale. In the first round, they were, you know, battling each other, and their gloves became locked up, and his finger kind of pulled out of socket. You could see he's having trouble with his fingers. They go between rounds. In the second round, Pliev, his finger was ripped off from the middle knuckle. The third finger, I guess, the ring finger.
Yeah.
It came off.
Yeah.
To the point it was bleeding all over, obviously.
Okay, just get to the update.
During the break in rounds two and three, the PA announcer asked people to look for the missing finger because they thought it may have flown off into row one or two of the crowd.
Yeah.
People were they stopped the bout to look for the finger. The finger was eventually found inside Pliev's glove. Goodell, it was stuck in his glove. That's how kind of meat and potatoes everything looked.
And we're having pigs in a blanket today. Yeah.
Coincidentally, Goodell was declared the winner by TKO. If you lose a finger, it should be like a push.
Yes, Todd.
And they stopped selling chicken fingers for a little while just to avoid any confusion while people were trying to find where it was.
Pliev was rushed to the hospital. They didn't take him casually to the hospital. They rushed him to the hospital for emergency surgery. The finger was reattached, but because of the torn tendons, he will need another procedure or two to get this finger off good to go.
Who's interested in pigs in a blanket today coming off the Traeger grill now?
Remarkably, I'm still all
in. I'm sure you are. I'm sure you are.
I can get past that story. I can.
I mentioned this in the first hour. You can go to danpatrick.com, sign up for the newsletter, and you can be part of our calendar for this next year. All you have to do is send in a picture of you in DP show gear and tell us your birth date, and your picture will appear on that date. Now, first come, first serve, because if I got 10 guys or 10 people who are born on May 15th, then only the first person in gets their picture on that date. Also, the Penny biscuits, the Bang biscuits with Penny, our house dog, those are available. 1 pound bag comes with 120 biscuits. You can shop at danpatrick.com. But Penny was a rescue dog by the big German East Coast Canine Rescue. And we're giving back 20% of all Bang biscuit sales to handpicked partners in the pet industry. So if you can do that, wonderful. Wonderful gesture on your part. All right. Update the poll results, Sarah McLevin.
Would you rather have a mid-level NBA job? Paulie nominated the Charlotte Hornets.
Okay, I did.
Oh, okay. Yep. Or the North Carolina men's basketball job, 74% UNC.
Yeah, I would too. I had a friend, my nephew sent me a note, said Jeff Perlman wrote about Refrigerator Perry's rookie year with the Bears. And his nickname, when he took his shirt off, one of the veterans on the Chicago Bears, when they saw Refrigerator Perry take his shirt off, they called him Mudslide. It's kind of mean-spirited there for Fringe. That was in the Walter Payton book, Sweetness book. Yeah, McLevin.
Remember his story on John Rocker that sort of changed that? The Sports Illustrated story Jeff Perlman wrote on John Rocker?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That was a big deal. That was a big deal at the time with John Rocker. I pretty much ended his career, although did he become sort of a reality star or was he in some shows? Felt like, and then it felt like John just embraced that, whatever that label was or that profile, then John just sort of said, all right, you can't beat it, I'm going to join it. Yeah, Paulie.
Yeah, Rocker was a really good reliever until about 2001 with the Atlanta Braves, and then he was out of baseball before age 29.
Final hour coming up. Dick Vitale will stop by. Good to chat with Dickie V. Just signed a 2-year contract extension with the mothership. Pretty incredible. Final Four coming up Saturday. Houston, Baylor, UCLA, Gonzaga. Talk some hoops with Dickie V. More of your phone calls as well. Final hour, Dan Patrick Show.